Today, we have a special announcement for you.
European elections. June's election.
European elections.
European elections.
European elections.
More than 500 million people are called to vote across Europe this June. European elections are approaching, and outside of policy expert circles, many are still looking for answers on how to get involved. Our daily podcast, Today in the EU, is your go-to source for understanding the inner workings of the European Union. Over the next 8 weeks, dive into our exclusive content. We have prepared explainers, feature stories, and in-depth mini-series to demystify the EU elections and help you make informed choices between June 6th and June 9th. Today in the EU, elections in focus, the vote. If you are a citizen from one of the 27 countries that are members of the European Union, you have about a month before you're called to the polls for the European Parliament election. This will be the first vote after Brexit, and today we're getting right into the practicalities of the voting process and looking at the impact this vote will have on the future of the EU. What are the key dates we need to keep in mind, and what can we expect from this election? Hello and welcome, I'm Giada Santana, and this is Today in the EU. We're here with Aurélie Pougnet, Politics Hub editor at Euractiv. It's about 40 days before the elections where European citizens will be called to the polls between the 6th and the 9th of June. However, European citizens in different countries will be voting differently and on different days. Why is that the case?
Well, it really comes down to how your traditional voting system works and how each government wants to organize it. Depending on each country, citizens are used to voting differently and used to voting on different dates, actually. So in France, for example, or the French, being French, I'm used to voting on a Sunday. And you know that elections always fall on a Sunday, whereas in other countries, it may not be the case. For example, in Italy, I know that this year it is both on Saturday and on a Sunday. So this is something that really comes down to your national traditions and, of course, how the government wants to organize it.
Right. And what about the process of candidate picking? How does that work?
It depends, again, on your traditional way of voting. And the elections, the European elections have, of course, their own specialty. But it is any of the day, depending on how in each 27 countries you vote yourself. So you don't vote as an Italian for a French list. You vote for Italians to represent yourself in the European Parliament. This is very important. And you don't have this transnational list idea that's being replicated where you would vote for federalist or maybe more federalist parliament. And then you'd have, for example, in certain country, again, talking about France, because this is the one I know the best, you have one list for the entire country, and then you just decide whether you want to vote for socialists, the Greens, the centre-right party, and depending on whatever your preferences and your affiliations are. And in other countries, you have more of a local anchorage when it comes to the list, where you vote for people that are in your circumscription, and this really comes down to each state to decide how to organize this.
And is every country ready?
It's a bit more complicated than this. I would say they're getting ready at the moment. What is important is elections, campaigns, you never really know when they start, do you? It's especially the European elections, because there's so little information surrounding them for the general public. Of course, we've seen new barometer, Eurobarometer, so new polls that suggest that more and more people would go vote this year. I think it's up to 60% voting participation, which may not sound like a lot, but is a lot for European elections. So countries are getting ready in a way that it's more in a public debate. You'd hear the presidents, the prime ministers, the ministers mention it a little bit more on TV. You get debates, all of this happening to attract the attention of the general public.
You just mentioned how voters will be able only to choose among a list of national candidates, of course. How does that list come into place?
So it really depends on, again, the party and how they want to organize their list and their own priorities. So you'll see, for example, that for certain parties, gender balance is very important. So you'll see a list where you have one man, one woman, one man, one woman. You'd have lists where maybe, maybe in the Greens, they want to have more politicians that come from civil society or more interested in environmental policy. So there will be different backgrounds.
Who's in charge of compiling the lists?
It's for the national parties and delegations to do this list. So actually, for example, I mean, people just send their resumes. It's actually a selections process. I know someone who sent their resume. And so you send your cover letter, your resume, and you go through a job interview, basically. Yeah, it's actually like you're applying for a job interview.
So what are the next steps after that?
Then, of course, depending on the political priorities of each party, then they will pick you or not, depending on how you can defend their interests. And it's very tricky. It's also depending on what you've done before. Of course, if you've already been an MEP, so a member of the European Parliament, and you've won this amazing file on Artificial Intelligence Act, for example, or something very tricky like a migration deal or something very sensitive, very touchy that has really been seen by your country or by your party as a big win, then maybe you have a higher chance of being higher on the list. And if you're higher on the list, you have a higher chance of actually sitting in parliament. So it's really unclear yet who's going to be on those lists. Some are already out there, some are already public. Most of the lead candidates are public or getting public at the moment, but we'll know more just a few weeks before the elections, actually, about 3 weeks before. And this is, I guess, when this campaign will really be starting.
Right. And so, as we said, people will be voting between the 6th and the 9th. Well, when will we have the results?
We'll have the results as time goes on, but really, I would say on the 9th, during the night, we'll have the first clearer results as to, okay, like last time in 2019, I remember that the Greens were just exploding their results.
Das sind Stimmen für den Klimaschutz. Das sind Stimmen für die Demokratie. Das sind Stimmen gegen Rechtspopulisten.
It was amazing to watch. It was completely unexpected, but it was just after all those marches among the younger generations about climate and how to secure a better deal for the environment, really, which all led to the Green Deal, which is this whole set of regulations to actually have a more climate friendly and environmental friendly policy in the EU. So you know what the first trends are the first evening, and this is very important. And then it will take maybe another 24 hours, I would say, the next day to have a clearer view as to who's going to be in parliament, really.
And then what happens?
Then comes the bigger question of, okay, so the parliament has to get into place, which means they basically all have to move to Brussels, come to Strasbourg, have their first plenary session, decide on how to take the chairs of each committee. And it's a very political process, again, because, of course, if you can't have only French at the head of all the committees, for example, but you can't also have all the Polish at the head of all the committees. So there's this very sensitive process, a very political process of appointing and voting and naming people at the head of the committees, which are going to lead the legislative work and everything like this. It's very important. And then more importantly, or at least on the side of the member states, they have to think, okay, how do we see the European elections? So the will of the citizen, and use that to give guidance to the next policies. So everything that's going to happen for the next 5 years. And concretely, what that means is naming people at what we call the top jobs.
Let's explain what the top jobs consist in.
So these are the head of the European Commission, so the EU executive, the head of the European Council, which is the representation of the member states' will, and the head of, as well, the European Diplomatic Service. And then the parliament elects its own president for the next 5 years. Those top jobs, those three top jobs that I just mentioned, are extremely important because they have to reflect the power balances between the parties in the parliament. Basically, if, again, the EPP, which is the center-right party, gets the most votes, it means that they get one of the highest top jobs, most likely the European Commission, because it's one of the best top jobs and is considered as such. You are the head of the European executive. You propose the legislation. You have a lot of power. However, the question is, who'd come next? Would it be the liberals? Would it be the socialists? Would it be the more right-winged conservatives? And you'd give, for example, the European Council to the socialists, which is now headed by a liberal, Charles Michel.
As we know, the vote is going to shape seats in the parliament, and that in turn is going to shape policy. What type of impact is that going to have?
Huge impact, because all the legislation goes through parliament. So like I was saying, in 2019, the Greens had a lot of more seats than anyone would ever expected to have in the parliament. So again, if you'd have another green wave, we called it at the time, then that's going to impact the policies that the European Commission would present, because we'd expect them to be leaning towards more greener policies.
What is the latest data saying about these upcoming elections results?
What we understand from the polls at the moment is that the parliament will go more towards the right. So right-wing parties, more conservatives. And for example, the major party in that side of the hemicycle is centre-right and is very much linked to businesses. And it wants really smaller businesses and companies to actually thrive. And it wants to maybe stop a little bit over-regulation, that kind of situations. And that's, again, going to shape the policies a lot, because if you say, well, we're stopping regulation, what does that mean exactly? What kind of regulations are we stopping? Are we trying to work into subsidies? Are we trying to work into more business-friendly ways to involve them into the processes?
So voting matters.
It really does matter, actually. It's going to have a huge impact on how everything can be voted, because you have to, at the end of the day, legislation has to go through Parliament. And if you don't propose something that can go through Parliament, then your piece of legislation will never actually pass and will never be implemented. So the Commission and the Member States have to keep that in mind. What is the will of the people that is going to be reflected in the Parliament at the end of the day? And what are they going to actually going to have to work with?
Thank you, Aurélie. I'm Giada Santana, and this was Your Activist Today in the EU podcast. Visit Your Activist to stay on top of the latest news, sign up for our podcast newsletter, and if you haven't subscribed yet, you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever it is that you get your podcasts. Leave us a star review on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or your favorite streaming platform. It will really help us spread the word about our work. This episode was produced by Miriam Sainz de Tejada, Nicoletta Yonta, and me. See you tomorrow! As part of our commitment to accuracy, inclusion, and transparency, Euractiv is part of the Trust Project.